The 100 Years' War, the De Guiscolin period, the results of the Truce of Bruges, Part 2. For the French king's ministers, the Gascon companies were just part of a broader problem to which their own troops contributed as much as anyone. The growing dependence of both governments on full-time professionals to fight their wars meant that any prolonged period of truce was bound to release large numbers of armed men into idleness and ultimately crime. On the French side, the most problematic group were the Bretons. Brittany was a poor and densely populated region with a large nobility, serious war damage, and deep political divisions. These conditions had created a great military diaspora as Breton soldiers formed themselves into self-governing companies to job for work in the service of the King of France. They were employed on all fronts. On the march of Brittany itself, in garrison duties in the Loire provinces, in the personal retinues of De Guiscolin and Clisson. After the request of Poitou, most of them found employment in the armies of Louis of Anjou and Languedoc. The ravages of the Breton companies had fewer diplomatic ramifications than those of English and Gascons, because their victims were usually other subjects of the King of France. But sound judges, such as the poet Eustace Deschamps, thought that they were the worst of all. Louis of Anjou had released almost all the professional companies in his service in the course of 1374. Most of them were Bretons. Some of them crossed the Pyrenees to support a hopeless rebellion against Peter IV in Aragon, and then drifted back to Languedoc in the following spring. Some made their way into Berry, Limousin, and Auvergne, the traditional hunting grounds of the Gascon companies. Most eventually found their way across the Rhone to Luton, the Papal States, under the leadership of Olivier de Guiscolin and Sylvester Boudez, the constable's brother, and his cousin. The Breton bands in the south had already been unemployed for several months and were becoming a serious problem. They went, says Froissart, to serve the lords from whom they expected the biggest profits. But the truth was, there were no lords in France with work to give them, or indeed to the hundreds of others who were paid off after the Truce of Bruges was proclaimed. The French government responded as it had done in the 1350s and 1360s. It tried to push the companies out of France to do their worst somewhere else. Louis of Anjou paid the leading Breton companies operating beyond the Rhone not to come back into France, and took steps to obstruct the crossings of the river should they try. The Queen of Sicily, Seneschal in Provence, successfully blocked the crossings of the Durance to prevent them from moving south. The Pope paid them ransom money to go away, but then found that it was impossible for them to leave. In the following spring, most of them were cantoned in the Papal States around Compontres and the east bank of the Rhone at Pont Saint-Esprit. Meanwhile, news arrived of fresh bands of soldiers making their way down the Rhone towards Avignon, apparently in hope of finding work in Spain. Most of these men had probably been laid off from garrisons in northern France. In about May 1375, Charles V promoted a scheme to enroll several thousand unemployed soldiers into a private army and send them into Germany under the command of Guron de Gousset. Guron was one of the most remarkable of the rootless adventurers of the period. By birth, one of the leading barons of Champagne, he owed his fame and fortune to the favor of Edward III. He had arrived in England at the age of 21 in 1360 as one of the hostages for the performance of the Treaty of Bretigny, and had made a great impression at Edward's court, then at its most glamorous. Froissart, who met him there, described him as a graceful courtier who sang and danced beautifully and filled the needy historian's hand with silver. In 1365, still ostensibly a prisoner, he married Edward III's eldest daughter, Isabel. He was admitted to the Order of the Garter, and in the following year became the Earl of Bedford. Not content with making Enguerrand by rank one of the leading barons of England, Edward III bought his son-in-law the rich county of Soissons in northern France. The outbreak of the war between the country of his birth and that of his adoption was a cruel blow for de Cusset. He responded to it by declaring that he would fight for neither king. Instead, he led an errant life in Bohemia and Italy before returning to France in about the middle of 1374. Cusset had inherited from his mother a rather tenuous claim to a group of territories beyond the eastern march of France in Breisgau, Alsace, and the German-speaking regions of Switzerland, which were currently occupied by Habsburg dukes of Austria. It was two of Charles V's counselors, Burel de Revardier and Jean de Mercier, who apparently suggested that the king might be prepared to contribute to the cost of employing the Bretons and Gascon companies in a campaign to recover those places by force. The plan was for Cusset to take into his service as many as possible of the companies operating in central France and the Rhone Valley. To these would be added a second army of about 1,500 men-at-arms, most of whom were drawn from the troops concentrated in Normandy for the surrender of Saint-Sever. They included about 500 Burgundian men-at-arms led by Charles V's lieutenant in Normandy, Jean de Vienne, and 400-strong Welsh companies of Owen of Wales. The French king, we are told, did not care what the terms were provided that his kingdom was rid of them. Early in June 1375, the Breton companies, cantoned by the Rhone, began to move north. The Pope paid them 5,000 francs to speed them on their way, and then hired the Gascon companies of Bertrand de La Salle to guard the northern limits of his domains and prevent them from coming back. Originally about 2,000 strong, as they advanced, the Breton companies were joined by other bands of unemployed soldiery. By the time they passed Lyon at the beginning of July, their estimated strength was about 4,000 men-at-arms in addition to 800 Genoese and a huge mob of pages, pillagers, and hangers-on who always followed in the wake of routier armies. They swarmed across the Dombes River in the county of Burgundy during July and August. The grapes were ripening on their stalks and the harvest was about to begin as the Bretons burst into the Berois at the beginning of September. Everywhere they passed, they left a trail of burning buildings and uprooted vines. On August the 31st, 1375, Cusset issued a wordy manifesto from Paris, proclaiming his grievances against the Dukes of Austria and declaring his intentions, with God's help, of recovering his own. Then in the first few days of September, he marched through Champagne into the great plain of the Sundgau west of Basel and waited for the companies to join him. So we'll see what happens when they show up. It's an interesting idea of having all of these unemployed soldiers do something somewhere. Now the sources for this: The Hundred Years' War, The Chronicles by Froissart, The Hundred Years' War by Perrois, The Hundred Years' War by Nylans, and The Hundred Years' War, The House Divided, Volume 3 by Sumption. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.